Holding my chest.
My legs and hands.
Silence.
Feeling the pressure.
What?
She was a fraud.
It's a million bloody degrees out there.
No wind.
I'm sorry if I said anything awful.
Blessed lambs of God.
Why hadn't he got up to chop the capsicums?
I was never a good reader.
Immaculately bland.
Anyway, it looks like...
What do we do with this now?
You're not even supposed to use the word fat.
Boys like girls.
When we were very young.
I was back home in Norwich.
Square Sound. You're listening to the audiobook podcast for the makers and listeners of audiobooks.
Hello and welcome everyone to the audiobook podcast, recorded at the Square Sound Studios in Melbourne, Australia. I'm Justine Sloan-Lees and together with Abby Holmes...
Hello everyone.
...we discuss what goes on behind the stories in the production of audiobooks. So our guest today is one of Australia's most awarded and loved audiobook narrators. In fact, I think he is Australia's most awarded and loved audiobook narrator. Stig Weems first studied drama in his native Perth, then in New York with acclaimed actor Uta Hagen. Settling in Melbourne in 1989, he was cast as one of the leads in the sitcom Colin Carpenter, as well as the voice of Bob, a dog, in The Bob Morrison Show, and the voice of little Elvis Jones in the animated series. So early on, quirky voice acting was really his thing. Soon after, he became the voice of the G, something that generations of football-loving Melburnians will remember vividly from footy matches at the MCG. Stig has worked extensively in live theatre. He was a shoo-in to perform Puck in A Midsummer Night's Dream, and film too. He writes as well, starting off early in his career to create his own stand-up material, and still doing so for television and for his own video production company, Mezzanine Productions. But it is books that Stig is most well known for. He's narrated hundreds of them, his speciality being young adult and children's titles, which, as you'll hear, he has a lot of fun playing with. Most recently, his narration of Boy Swallows Universe by Trent Dalton won Audiobook of the Year 2019 in the Australian Book Industry Awards. We're so happy to have Stig here to really generously share his experiences.
Thank you, Justine, and welcome, Stig.
Abby, how good's this?
It is good, isn't
it's
it?
Funny,
seeing
isn't
we
it?
First met when we were doing an audiobook together back in about 1990.
Don't say it. It makes us sound old.
Well, no, we were just kids, weren't we?
Well, we were playing kids,
we were
weren't
playing
we?
Kids.
Amazingly,
right.
You know, because really, narration, mostly for me, had always been a singular thing. You know, you do it on your own. And that's changing a little bit, where more and more books are being done where they'll use more than one narrator for the story.
That right?
Yeah, there's a bit of a trend to lean towards using more than one person to narrate the book. So for you and I back then, it was more of a play though, really, wasn't it?
Well, it was more of it. It did feel more like a play. So there's our parents, Mike Bishop and Di Greentree played our parents.
Our parents,
didn't
and we
they?
Played, yes, that's right.
And you we played the
brother
kids,
and sister.
Brother and sister.
How old were you playing?
12.
You were playing a
12-year-old. And your name was Craig.
That's right.
And I can't remember my name because I don't think I ever said it, but
no, I
said,
can't remember what your character
was. Craig this and Craig that, and Craig gives me the shits, and, you know, it was, you were so annoying.
Well, no, because that's right, I was your older brother and I was leading you astray.
That's right.
We ran away from
home
together.
That's
right.
That's right. Well, that was incredible. And, of course, we've been firm friends ever since.
Yeah, and that's
shared
actually
lots
is
of family time and lots of career high points, really,
yeah,
haven't we?
Yeah, that's true.
So tell me about when you started.
Well, I wanted to develop my career in doing more voiceover work. Mm. I just started volunteering at Vision Australia to read books for vision impaired people because I thought it would be a good opportunity to develop characters, become more comfortable in a studio, get a sense of mic technique and grow that part of my career so I could, you know, use it to make money from. Mm.
That's absolutely true. I do tell people who want to work in voiceover or audiobooks to do that, even though it's voluntary these days. It used to pay, I know.
I think they started using me a lot for children's books because just the nature of my voice. It's quite light and I have lots of energy and it's perfect for, you know, for children's books. And then sort of about 6 months after doing that with Vision Australia, Belinda Audio heard of me and they got me in to narrate That Eye the Sky by Tim Winton.
Mm-hmm. And how long ago was this?
Well, I think that's like 24, 25 years
ago. Yeah, amazing.
Something like that. Yes, and that book won the TDK Audiobook of the Year Award.
TDK was the name of a cassette company.
Well, I'm sure they did more than just make cassette tapes. Yeah. But
how the world has changed.
But there they were sponsoring, you know, audiobook awards because they were in sound. They made, they made tape. Yeah, so that won that award, and it really kind of cemented me, certainly with Belinda, but I became known as, you know, somebody who could do children and young adult, really, is mostly what I get asked to do because of the youthfulness of my voice. Voice for kids and the craziness of my sort of humour,
personality.
I guess. Yeah. But also, in many ways, I think I prefer that young adult genre more, the coming of age book, you know, and that's really what that Eye of the Sky was. It's, you know, the 14-year-old boy who's just discovering sexuality and 14, 15-year-old and girls and life and having to deal with that, becoming a man, really. And those stories are always so beautifully written and they speak to me. You know, there's always something in it that you think, you know, that reminds me of my own youth. So it's not hard to fall into the page of those stories and become the book, you know, become a part of the book because I feel so connected to it. And they're always so beautifully written and moving. I love them.
Yeah, absolutely. So how many books have you narrated in the last year?
About four. I think.
Four.
So, in fact, these days I really don't do too many. I'm now the voice of the Andy Griffiths books, and so I'm a bit pigeonholed with that. I do all the... I've done all of his books, you know, every single Andy Griffiths book that's ever been written. It's me, to the point where people actually think I'm Andy. Kids hear me speak in the supermarket. They come up to me and say,
"Are you Andy Griffiths?"
And I always go, "Yes, I am."
Yeah.
Sign an autograph.
That's incredible. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah,
because you
know,
have an incredibly recognisable style. But as you were saying before, it's also about your energy, which is your personal energy.
Yeah.
But it translates so brilliantly through the fact that you've learned the techniques of working with a microphone and levels and et cetera, et cetera.
You know, I think I was just a perfect match for Andy's style of humour, you know. It was sort of a match made in heaven. We're just on the same page. I really got his books. You know, they made me laugh anyway. And some of the early books I did for Andy was the Just series. It was a collection of books with just little short stories in it. Just annoying, just stupid, just disgusting. And they had this theme through them. Back then, books would finish and you'd have to, say, turn the CD over and go to the next CD.
That's right.
You know, or the chapter would end and sort of make these announcements. I suggested to the engineer when we were making the first one that we should do stuff. So if it was just annoying, for example, we'd do an annoying voice who would say, you know, "It's now time to turn the CD over," or stupid characters that I'd invent that tied in with whatever the theme of the book was. And I went to Andy, or we did, Belinda did, and said, "This is what we're planning to do. What do you think?" And he said, "Oh, well, let me have a listen." Gave it to him with these finished added text, basically made up stuff that we invented in the studio. And he said, "Love it. Absolutely love it."
Brilliant.
And to this day, kids still come up to me and say, "We loved all the Andy Griffiths books and we really sort of were weaned on the Just series. But as much as we love the books, we really love your little stupid bits in between."
At the end.
So what it did was it gave people who, man, kids would always read the book because they're so fabulous.
Yeah, sure.
But then if you went, "Oh, I can't get enough Andy, I'll also listen to the book," you got this, like, bonus track.
Yeah, right.
You know, you got me being an idiot in the studio, which sort of added to the flavour, the feel of the book. And I think it also created this, you know, this thing that I was as crazy in my own right as Andy was. So we became this sort of, you know, this combination, really.
Mm. So early on, did you speak to Andy at all?
Yeah, in the very beginning, just to get his permission that it was all right. And then, of course, once we started doing more books, they'd get made. I'd just do that every time. I'd do the disgusting one where I'd be revolting and disgusting.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And then he'd just listen and approve it, really. He knew what we were doing. He got the idea. And the books became, you know, almost as popular as the written work.
Right. Is it because it has that added dimension of sound effects and things going off all over the place?
Yeah, and that's true. That's exactly right. It wasn't just me. Yes, I gave it this voice, which was the base for the engineer to work with. But then Ben, who was the engineer who always worked on the Andy Griffiths stuff, he would add music and sound effects and, you know, stupid noises to highlight it. And sometimes I'd read the bit and then I'd do all the background noises, all these sound effects, and he'd work with them. I'd just record a minute of me, you know, doing party sounds or burping or farting or something that he'd then cut up and put in the background of what I'd already written,
If you know the book, you go in there and, of course, you've done the prep, so you know the book. Are you kind of second-guessing, "Oh, this is where a sound effect will go," and giving it a break?
Oh, yeah, to some degree. I mean, it's not even giving it a break. You just know that in the background that's going to be going on. You know what I mean? Sure. Like that the footy match will be playing in the background.
Yeah,
so okay. I'll get to the end of that bit of the chapter or that paragraph and then I'll go, oh, no, Jack, throw it over here, because shot my cap. Oh, no, he's got him in the face. Get down. Ah! Throw all this stuff in, and yeah, then right. later on he'd cut all that up and, you know, you'd hear it in the background of whatever the footy match was sounding yeah. like, you know.
Brilliant.
You know what really inspired it? Was what? That Terry Denton and Andy Griffiths worked so closely together on all of those books. That, you know, they were a combination. And I remember thinking, really, what I need to do as the narrator of these books is to sonically scribble in the margins in the same way that Terry does with his illustrations.
Yeah, right.
So that's the way I described it to Ben and to Andy, was it give me the license to play around in the margins of this audiobook yeah. and let it colour in the same way that you already do on the written work.
Yeah.
And he liked the notion of that. And then, you know, we sort of got the hang of how to do that
And you
best.
Build the trust over the over time. And
over like 15 years, I guess, of been doing it. And now, of course, the Treehouse books are enormous, you know, yeah. global. I'm even making inroads into America at the moment. They're big in the UK, Scotland.
Wow.
I do a bit of travel, actually, with shows that I do in libraries and
well, yeah,
in
let's
recent
talk about
times.
That. Stig well, at the recent, library.
Stig Live at the Library, yeah. Which really, in many ways, came out of being the voice of the Andy Griffiths books
yep.
because, you know, he was so popular. And it just seemed to me like it was an opportunity to go. And Belinda in particular wanted me to help promote children's audiobooks out there.
Yep.
So I just started going into libraries and talking about the work.
And
that
so
I
you did. Do a show. Basically, it's structured like a show.
Yeah. It's
they bus schools in and
Oh, these days we go into the schools. It's just easier for me to, you know, go to the schools. The whole school attends, you know.
So it's not at the local library. It's at the local school
yeah.
in the library.
That's right. No,
or,
well,
or
no, usually,
room.
Yeah, no, usually it's in the multi-purpose room or,
Stig
know.
At the library is a branding thing.
Yeah. Well, it did start
called,
in the library. It's just that
yeah,
we can't
sure.
fit all those kids into
yeah.
a library. And at the end of the day, yeah. it's really about encouraging kids to use a thing called BorrowBox to download audiobooks, mm-hmm. you know, for free. It's through the library.
Yeah.
To be able to access BorrowBox, you have to be a library member anyway. So the libraries don't really care that I do it in the school. It's just me going and speaking to the masses about how
yeah.
great libraries are,
right, sure.
you know, and how you can
it's
access
brilliant.
Audiobooks.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
So in a sense, so what's happened in recent times is that you've moved to a couple of adult titles and been incredibly successful with them. That is extraordinary. How did that happen? How did you get your first?
I'm reluctant to even call them adult titles. They really are more sort of young adult, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, young adult.
Young adult. The most recent one I think you might be referring to is Boy Swallows Universe, which
yep.
is fabulous. A beautiful, beautiful book. From the time I first started looking into that book, from the time I first heard about it, there was nothing but glowing rave reviews
yeah.
about and like there was anticipation about when this book was going to come out because, and it completely lived up to all the hype. It's just absolutely stunning and beautifully written and poetic. In a landscape full of ugly, awful scenes, somehow Trent Dalton manages to make this book beautifully poetic and I'm not sure how he does that. The story there is that Trent, and this often is the case actually, authors get sent demo tapes from the narrators and it's...
Demo tapes, that ages you.
Or what should
you
I
still
call
sound
them?
Like a 20-year-old, but...
demo MP3s, you know, downloaded digital versions. Yeah. You know, they might get sent 3, 4, 5 different voices to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And he got sent my tape along with some others and he called his brothers and said, I've got this tape here from a guy called Stig Weems. Do you reckon it's the same one? And he told me the story that when he was growing up in Brisbane, at 7:30, Colin Carpenter would come on the television on Channel 10, a show that I was an actor in.
Mm.
Him and his brothers and his dad loved Colin Carpenter. They thought he was funny and they loved my character. He talked about it with such fondness, such great memories as being a real highlight in their household because at 7:30... his dad would be sober and he would be laughing at Colin and it would be a really good feel in the Dalton house. By 10:30, his dad would be drunk and he'd beat the shit out of them.
Oh, my God.
So this beautiful time
wow.
in these boys' life at 7:30 on a Sunday night held nothing but great memories.
And you were part of that.
And I was somehow part
Isn't
of it.
Isn't that incredible?
So when Trent gets a tape and it says Stig Weems and he calls his brothers and says...
Reckon it's the same guy.
And they look me up, Google me, and they go, it's the same guy. So he said it was a... he said, plus, you know, your audition was really good, which helped, but he said, so it was sort of a foregone conclusion that we went with you. He said it just felt like full circle and...
Yeah.
he told me after he'd got sent a copy of the book when it was finished, and he gave me one of the best compliments I think I've ever had as a narrator. And he said, I started listening to it, Stig, and he said, within maybe, you know, a very short time, he said, I just started listening to the story and I actually started to think it was your story, not mine. This is the man who'd written it, right?
That is an amazing compliment.
It was. I was like, oh, God, so lovely.
And you know, you just hit on what I think is the central thing about audiobook narration, is that the narration after a short while should disappear in favour of the story and the visuals that the listener is creating for themselves. It should never be about the voice.
Mm. I think that's exactly the secret to it. Yeah. People ask me, you know, what makes a good narrator or how do you become a narrator? Mm. And I said before about falling into the hole in the page or falling into the story. And that's the key. That is absolutely the trick with it, is that there's a little bit of like make sure you get the right voice for the right book, which is the job of the producers and the author to some degree. Mm. But once you're chosen, you're the voice, then what you have to do as a narrator is to live and breathe every moment of that story like it was happening to you for the first time.
Absolutely.
Like you're living it now as you go. And, you know, that's...
That everything is something you just thought of.
Yes.
You just...
It's just happening to you
right
there.
Or you're just relating something, you're recalling.
That's acting, isn't it, Ab? Because
that is acting.
That's what actors will read a script or, you know, they'll do a play and they have to do the same stuff every night, but they've got to make the audience feel like it's happening to them at that same moment.
Yeah.
You read the book and then it's almost like now I have to let go of it and breathe it in for the first time when I say it in front of a microphone like this.
Yeah, that's right. So let's just move to, because we've started to talk about technique there, how do you go about preparing your book? What steps do you take to understand it, get ready for performance?
What I actually like to do, first of all, is just read it.
Like you were just reading a book?
Yeah.
Not like you're going to narrate it, just like you want to read the story?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is kind of nice because you get the chance to be the audience.
Yeah.
You know, so you get a sort of a feel of like, okay, this is what, in a way, this is what my audience should be hearing or feeling when they hear me do it. But I'll just be that person first of all.
Right.
Okay. So read it in my head, just get into bed, read my book. And then I'll go back and then go through it a second time and make notes, you know, of like you were talking about before, where, you know, sometimes there's words you go, oh my God, how do you pronounce that?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
look
yeah.
it up and, you know, and place names and all of that sort of stuff. But more than that, for me, it's because often there's not a lot of that in children's books. It's more about creating ridiculous characters, I suppose. And so what I'll do then is go, Red Beard. I'll write next to the, you know, you speak silence. So I write, you know, Big Guy Red Beard. So when that written, I somehow
straight
that,
into it.
It makes me understand what the Big Guy with the Red Beard sounds like.
Yeah, right.
And so little notes like that I give myself for character voices. I know a lot of really fabulous narrators do lots of really meticulous, pristine accents. And my accents are okay, but they're loose really because for me it's more about the character, you know. So I love inventing voices to suit the description that the author has given them.
Right.
I suppose more than meticulously trying to get that particular part of England where that accent
So it's more like
from.
A character trait of that person that you'll play rather than getting an accent correct.
In my mind, it's more important that that voice of that person should keep the story alive and going. And whether or not it's pitch perfect to be exactly from that part of England is, I think, less important.
It's interesting, you know, talking about characters. I often wonder whether, just like in voiceover, if you're doing a character read for an ad, for instance, you can kind of go off the script. You can't add words or take away words, but you can add flourish like, oh, I wouldn't have said that, when the line just is, I wouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like something about how do you actually give, even though that wasn't a good Scottish accent, you kind of got it and it had a visual that went along with it.
Totally, yeah.
Because you have to go from narrator to character. Somebody asked me this recently, did you do the whole lot all in one go, like just going from one to the other? I said, oh yeah, I just do it chronologically and I just pause and go out of my narrator voice into the character voice and then back to the narrator, which is usually a completely different kind of mood.
Mm.
And then back to the, you know, character voice.
I reckon that the more you do that, you can just flow right through because you get into the rhythm of what that's like. And of course, the characters speak in that moment and then you notice the narration coming up and you know that then she's going to speak again. So you've already got her in your head.
Yeah, that's
you just
right.
have to dance between the two of them.
Yeah.
I just think you're absolutely right. That's the very thing, isn't it, of being in the moment, is that if you felt like your character thought about it before she said, oh, I don't know about that, and had a little kind of, ooh, before she said it, because that's how it feels, then yes, as a listener, I'm much more in the moment.
I think so.
Than just the cold, oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's right. Doesn't give enough of a visual.
Mm, mm. It paints a better picture.
So you've done mostly fiction, but you recently did a non-fiction, well, it's a non-fiction book, isn't it? Sharks Never Sleep.
Well, it's a mix, really. I actually love that book. I thought it was fantastic. There was a lot of information about shark attacks around the world.
Right.
It would then very cleverly and beautifully go into the storytelling of what it was like when this person was paddling out to sea on a beautiful morning and about to go surfing, the thing that they loved to do most of all, and how they looked across and noticed the Japanese man suddenly just dive under. And so it was poetic in the way that it was written, but then it would just go back to the facts and figures of what shark attacks are like around the world and theories, really, as to why sharks attack and what man is doing to combat that and whether or not we've got a right to do some of the things we're doing, whether it's dangerous for the environment. Fascinating book and a really interesting mix of fiction and non-fiction and cleverly written, you know.
Sounds amazing. You did that here at Square Sound.
Yeah, that was great. Square Sound, yeah, that's right. Audiobooks are taking off.
Like, aren't they?
You know, when I think back to when I first started reading audiobooks 25 years ago, people didn't even know what it was. You had to battle to get them to understand it, you know. And it certainly wasn't sexy to be an audiobook narrator. These days, high-calibre actors are scrambling to put their hand up to want to be, to lend their voice to a book because it comes with respect.
That's right, exactly.
As you said, it's a great part of our work. It's far more rewarding than standing in a voiceover studio and reading a 30-second commercial for chocolate.
You betcha.
You know, there's something about it that just immerse yourself and lose yourself in it in the same way you do if you get a film or a TV show or a play.
Yeah. It is just as strong on the performance scale as anything I've ever done on a stage or a screen far as satisfaction level is concerned. Because it is performance. It's just very different.
Mm. And challenging.
And
you have to come up with all those voices and do it in a way, and the producers are out there expecting you not to make mistakes and get on with it, Abby.
Absolutely, they are.
There's no pressure. But yeah, there was a time where people didn't even know what it was, and these days, of course, it's huge.
And it's exciting. Wouldn't have happened 5 years ago.
No.
Podcasts on audiobook narrating.
Yeah.
Because, of course, lots of different people want to do it. Authors are required or requested by their publishers to do it.
It's just nice to hand it over to somebody creative
to a professional.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I don't come over to your place and write your book for you.
Nah. That's right. Anyway, we could talk all day about audiobooks. Perhaps you could come back for another podcast. Anyway, thank you, Stig. It's been absolutely wild and you're amazing. You're one of the people I have so much respect for in all the performance ways, but as an audiobook narrator, God, you deserve all of those awards. You are amazing.
Oh, thanks, Ab. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to the audiobook podcast brought to you by Square Sound. If there's something that we haven't covered in our audiobook series that you'd like to know about, send us a message at studio.squaresound.com.au. The audiobook podcast was produced by Marianne Plaza, together with Abby Holmes and Justine Sloan-Lees. With special thanks to all our guest speakers, Square Sound is an audiobook and podcast studio in Melbourne, Australia. Thanks for listening.